Bro, what's up? Right on. Hey, dude, guess what tonight? Pool party, my house.
This is Pool Party Radio, the podcast where we talk about chili habanero. I'm your host, Park, joined by Jason Razorblades Frisbee.
I'm an American badass, watch me kick. You can roll with rock or you can suck my dick. I'm a porno flick, I'm like Amazing Grace. I'm gonna fuck some hoes after I rock this place.
Hey, Parker.
Hey, what's going on?
Not too much. I actually did some traveling this weekend.
Yeah, you went to Austin, right?
Yeah, I did. I went to Austin under almost no pretenses outside the fact that I'm visiting my family in Arkansas and my mom, playing the most hip cards I've ever seen in my life, suggests we go to Austin because she had never been there. Neither did anybody else. And yeah, we drove out there. Stayed in a hotel. I actually got to catch up with some friends who had just moved out there like about a month prior. And they seemed to be doing really well. They showed me around on Saturday. All sorts of stuff. I saw Moonrise Kingdom at the Alamo Draft House with my parents. Have you heard of this place?
Yeah. They play the good stuff. They play the good movies.
Oh, definitely. There's like two or however many locations in Austin. And we went to the more multiplex one. There's one on 6th Street that does like the Terror Tuesdays, which seems like a junk food dinner staple. It's like cheapo movies, like $3 or something to that effect. And they get like these old 35 millimeter reels of all the horror classics, like Critters and all that shit. And they do some other stuff too, like quote-alongs, Girly Night. They have a feature each month that runs like every Monday. This month it's Stunt Rock, where it's just a bunch of hardcore movie stunts taking place, mostly from films of the 70s. It has like rock and then just these weird stunts happening. And on top of all that, you can drink beer or wine in the theater, and it's served to you on this little counter that runs down the aisles, and these runners come by and take your orders for not just beer and wine, but like food, milkshakes.
During the movie?
During the movie. And you don't have to talk to them. You just write it down. Like, you take a look at the menu, usually before the film, so you have time to eat it and everything. But you write down your order on these slips of paper and stick it in this little brass railing on the counter. So they run behind the counter between these rows of seats. There's plenty of room. And they'll take up the ticket, write down where you're sitting, and then they come back with it like 15, 20 minutes later.
That sounds shitty. Like, for a movie theater that's, like, so... Like, if you're talking during the movie, like, they kick you out there, and, like, they're real amped up on, like, you know, like, if you check your text messages, they kick you out. But no, like, ordering pizza and wine is fine during a movie, apparently. That's silly.
No, it was awesome. I would say don't knock it till you tried it, because eating, like, a hot dog and french fries at a film and... kind of be advised that this is way better hot dog, and it's better concession food than I've had at any other movie house. And getting like a beer while being able to watch the movie, like there was no obstruction, there was no discussion at all. It was just, they come by very silently. They might as well be like no theater style, like wearing all black. You know, they were just missing the hoods. That would have been the only thing that would have made it better, is if they just show up, like this floating tray of food comes by and is handed to you.
Well, if they were wearing hoods and dressed in all black, then George Zimmerman would have shot them. That would be bad, I guess.
How ironic.
But seeing as to how you were in Austin, like, were they talking like with those really dumb Austin accents, like where they like, hey, can we get you some clam chowder? Like, did they say stuff like that? Like when you went to the movie, were they like, hey, there's no talking in the movie theater. Not you. Not you and not you. You all can't talk there. Not you and not you.
I hate to break this to you. I think you might be a little bit confused. It wasn't like, I mean, it sounds like you're kind of doing a New England accent. It was more kind of like when they came by.
That's like
they were saying stuff like, oi, how about another popcorn on the Bobby?
Oh, that's like the traditional Austin accent, like you see in movies like The Departed and The Town. You know.
No, this was more like, no, again, I think you're, those are New England films. You have to start thinking like Quigley Down Under or Crocodile Dundee. Remember where Crocodile Dundee comes from, Texas? He comes from Austin, Texas to New York, and he's so confused because he used to wrestle alligators. Does that make sense? Like, I don't want to be like, hey, you're wrong, but yeah, he was, I mean, it was different. You know?
Yeah, well, I've never seen The Town. I just think it's a funny, you know, like in The Fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Now he says, not you. You know, because he's from Austin.
Yeah. It's a, I would say, you have to think of like more of like Guy Pearce. Guy Pearce is from Austin. Nicole Kidman's from Austin, Texas. The guy from Gladiator, mm-hmm. He's from Austin, Texas, too.
Yeah.
So he was in that movie Romper Stopper, which was about like, it was about skinheads in Texas, in Austin. And I think Richard Linklater directed that one. I'm pretty certain.
Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah. Now it seems correct now. Like I saw that one movie, like Wolf's Creek or whatever that takes place. It's like a horror movie set in like the Austin Outback.
Yeah. That's exactly it.
Yeah. That makes sense now. All right. Well, let's move on to our new smash hit segment. We did this last week. It's called Kevin Moss Listens To. We're gonna do this again, Mr. Frisbee. You ready?
I think so. Hold on.
From last,
let me prepare myself. Austin, aside from being infested with dingoes, is also music capital of the world, so I have to.
They've got that opera house.
They do. It's huge.
Alright, so if you didn't tune in last week, I say tune in like you used a tuner to find the show. But last week we did the hottest new segment in America. It's called Kevin Moss Listens To. Kevin Moss from Drunk Food Dinner. You know, it's this show, this game show, where I ask Mr. Frisbee, does Kevin Moss listen to such and such band? And if he gets it right, he wins all the money.
That's a lot of money, by the way. I haven't seen any of the last money. You said I got it right. I think Robo John Brown held on to all of it.
He's not very trustworthy.
I would not say so.
But, I mean, there's nothing we can do about it. I mean, if we try to bring it up to him, then,
He just speaks in code. That's basically it.
And he's got, like, a lot of homeboys. I mean, what are we going to do? Beat him up and take the money back? I mean, that's not going to happen.
Get over, Viva, got my back.
Yeah, I mean, come on. How can we compete with that? He's got homies.
An entire revival's got his back? I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I think it's just you and I, but yikes.
Revival.
God.
All right, anyway, go back to producing my boy John Brown. We got to play America's hit new game show. So, Mr. Frisbee,
mm-hmm.
All the money. Is Kevin Moss of Junk Food Dinner listen to They Might Be Giants?
Like on a weekly basis?
Just at all.
Yeah, I'm going to guess that he has.
You're correct, Mr. Frisbee.
Can't wait to get all those monies.
You win all the money.
Oh, awesome. This is a very intense game. I know that Kevin Moss has listened to probably more music than any other human being in the world, but there's got to be like one or two things that he's not heard of yet. And when those two come, oh man, I'm going to be biting my fingernails off.
See, that's what makes this game so exciting, is because Kevin Moss is so versed in music that you would assume he listens to everything, but there's some stuff out there, and we'll find it.
Part of the Red Band Network. RedBandNetwork.com.
Okay, so last week, I wanted to mention this real quick. Last week, Frisbee and I and frequent guest Chris Arneson got together, and we taught Mr. Frisbee how to play Warcraft. And we recorded it, and we were planning on releasing it as like a bonus episode. But I don't know. I think now I've kind of decided against it. Like, I was going to post it like a couple of days ago. But it is just three guys playing Warcraft. So I don't know if anybody would care about that after all. Like, I was like real amped up on it. I was like, this is going to be hilarious. We're playing Warcraft and recording it. And but now I don't know.
Yeah, we might edit it down for a special segment show. There are parts of these episodes that run a little bit long. So we actually are sort of consolidating by holding on to the longer bits and keeping them away for a rainy day. So we might edit down the however long it was, like the hour and a half of me getting confused with what a horde and an alliance were and sort of mishing that up and mixing it with kind of like a 31 Flavors tasting or a Turkish Delights sampling or an Esther Price sample box or whatever. You get the idea. A Whitman sampler of Pool Party Radio. And that'll be one of them. It's just like a special treat.
Yeah, I think that's for the best. I don't think anybody wants to listen to an hour and a half of that. Although there are some funny parts in there. We talked about trousers a great deal.
And if anybody's curious, I tried to make my character look like David Bowie from Labyrinth. It's not to say that he did anything that David Bowie from Labyrinth would have done, but he did look a great deal like him. So that was comforting. It was enjoyable to an extent, but I can't imagine playing that game without you guys or other people who are as like jokey about it, getting some sort of group together, going on a raid, I guess.
Yeah, you can go on raids and kill everyone together. That's what good friends do.
Yeah, I'm not certain if that's I know we're good friends. I don't think we need a raid to prove it, though.
Not a Warcraft raid. I'd be willing to raid a small village in the Mongolian countryside with you, though.
All right. Yeah, that sounds good.
As is tradition. Yeah, I assume you haven't played in the week since we recorded that?
No.
Me neither.
I was busy in the Austin Outback.
Yeah.
But there, I forgot to mention that when I was in Austin, they have this place called Pinballs, and it's just filled with old school pinball machines and like a couple of classic arcade games, but mostly old pinball. Which doesn't sound that enticing at first, but it gets really, really awesome when you see the refurbished Doctor Who pinball machine. It was a delight. I wasted so many dollar bills and tokens on that game. They also had like every Elvira pinball machine ever made.
That sounds erotic.
It was very erotic. I've never seen flippers move so fast. And they had a ton of pinball games that were just based off of really bad 90s movies.
Yeah,
like some were good 90s movies like Terminator 2, but then right next to it, they had the Last Action Hero pinball machine.
Yeah, that's an even better movie than Terminator 2.
You're kidding, right?
Nah, man, the kid is way less annoying than Edward Furlong.
Oh, man, I think he's way more annoying.
I mean, that's how I judge 90s movies, is how annoying the kid was.
I can see that, but man, Last Action Hero kid is annoying as hell.
Man, I don't know, man. That Edward Furlong, he's always, like, screaming in that voice that hasn't gone through puberty all the way yet. He's always talking about, oh, you can't kill people. Bleh. That's not the kind of, like, that kid's supposed to be, like, real metal. He's hanging out with Budnick from Salute Your Shorts, and he's got, like, a motorbike. And then he's going, oh, I got a pet robot, and I don't want it to kill anybody. Man, that's, like, the first fucking thing you would do if you were, like, 12 and you had a pet robot, is you would make him kill all the people.
Vanquish my enemies, robot?
Yeah, dude, you wouldn't be like, oh, you gotta shoot him in the leg. Oh, you can't kill. You'd be like, let's go kill all my enemies. Let's go kill everybody that I have ever disagreed with in my entire life. Robot pet.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you mentioned robot pet, I just imagine robot dogs. Like those robot dogs, not like from Fahrenheit 451 or anything, RIP, Ray Bradbury, but the robot dogs that we actually have, which look like if the iPhone pooped out a dog, this is what it would look like. It just kind of like walks for a little bit. That Cylon beam runs across his eye socket, and then it just lays down or barks in that robotic voice. Can you imagine one of those things, like killing your enemies or trying to kill your enemies? Like, oh, take them out, robot dog.
We're getting closer and closer to the day when a robot pet can kill your enemies.
Do you think it'll look like a Terminator, or will it look like the canine unit from that old cartoon cop show about cops in the future?
I don't know. They'll probably look like the character Deathlok from Marvel in the 90s. Back when comic books had to cyber up all the superheroes. So they all were like half robot and like they all lived inside the internet and stuff.
Yeah, man, Deathlok looked like poop. That thing was ridiculous looking. Like, it could have looked more ridiculous, but it was just a slapdash piece of poop.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I could have drawn that. I feel like hundreds of thousands of kids listening to metal or like gathering the Iron Maiden covers for inspiration were drawing Deathloks before Deathlok came out in Comic Book Farm.
Yeah, it was pretty awful. It was like some guy, like some executive guy was like, hey, draw me a superhero that kind of looks like a Frankenstein, but with some sheet metal on him. Give him some big guns.
And just throw a red vest on him. We're not looking for a lot of design work there, folks. Let's be serious.
And this is the guy who's going to hang out with Spider-Man.
That's so crap.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure like everybody had Deathlok figurine, you know, after like going to garage sales with their grandparents or something. That's what you'd pick up in like the used toy bins in the early 90s or late 80s. Like, oh, here you go. This looks like a pretty rad character.
He was pretty rad. Speaking of pretty rad characters, you seem to have fallen in love this week. Is that true, Mr. Frisbee?
Yeah, that would be true. Sharon Needles is quite the character. Destiny of Badland Girls had brought up Sharon Needles on their show, which you can find at badlandgirls.com.
You should find them as soon as possible, because this week they start their show off with a song about the pool party radio.
It's a very sweet song. It actually got me a bit choked up. I never heard my name sung before, and hearing it sung next to yours was pretty special, I think.
And next to Julian Sands.
I know, right? And Old Cat,
yeah.
Which is pretty great. So yeah, go check that out. It's episode 20 with the Pool Party Radio tribute song. It's very good. And thanks a lot, girls, for doing that. That was awesome.
Yeah. And if somebody wants to make like a real sweet dubstep version of it, we'll use it for our theme song from now on.
But sure as hell will. Yeah.
Have a sweet drop, though.
Yeah. Although the ukulele version on its own is pretty great.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's sweet drops are awesome.
I love it.
You listening to us, Skrillex? Get on it.
Make us a new theme song, Skrillex.
But yeah, on Badland Girls, Destiny had brought up RuPaul's Drag Race and this contestant on the show named Sharon Needles. If you haven't seen the show, or if you don't know who RuPaul is, then none of this is probably going to make sense to you. RuPaul is probably one of the most prominent iconic figures of the 90s. A drag queen and author and actor / actress. And you've definitely seen or heard of RuPaul if you grew up in the 90s.
The Brady Bunch movie.
Right. So she has this competition now. He shows up out of drag and in drag when he's doing contestant judging everything. And they were talking about, you know, the drag race and everything, and this character named Sharon Needles. Sharon Needles is out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And Parker, I'm sure you remember going to like Celebrities or 1470 Second Floor.
Big time.
In Dayton. Yeah. And they would have the drag shows. And it's usually what it entails is somebody looking between like halfway between like Divine and RuPaul as far as skill of makeup application and dressing up goes, and just strutting their stuff while lip syncing to disco songs and Madonna.
And Shania Twain a lot. Mostly Britney Spears, though.
Mostly Britney Spears. Absolutely. Well, Sharon Needles comes out looking like a cross between like Peggy Bundy and Elvira, and has this complete like horror movie. I don't even say goth, because goth doesn't really quite do it justice. It's like this everything horror genre, Addams Family and early 80s or late 80s horror kind of conjures up is in this character.
Yeah, it's like if like the creatures from The Grudge were like real sexy and knew a lot about fashion, kind of.
Yeah, yeah. Or if Lady Gaga had died and she became this reanimated corpse, not a zombie, but just a reanimated corpse, it was completely like void of lifeblood and dressed in really awesome gothic looking clothing.
Like a Frankenstein made out of the internet, like Deathlock.
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good way of putting it. Because that's exactly how she describes herself, too. As being like a amalgamation of everything that's that we have anxieties about in pop culture. And she contributes a lot of that to her performances and her outfits. And man, I cannot stop watching Sharon Needle's videos. So yeah, Destiny was right. This person is an extremely addictive personality. And it's pretty great. She ended up winning the season 4 of RuPaul's Drag Race. And I think it was either this past week or last week, she had it was this past Monday. Upon her return to Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania declared it Sharon Needle's Day. And she went to the courthouse and in full drag and talked about what a great honor it was. She wished everybody happy Halloween and also did some advocation for being aware of bullying and gay rights as well. So really awesome personality. I mean, just if you can watch like the Meet the Queen segment on YouTube, that alone is really awesome.
Yeah, I never got into RuPaul's Drag Race. It seems like the kind of thing I would love because like I love reality shows and I especially love reality shows where like there's some sort of like fake competition, you know, like there's no faker competition than finding out who RuPaul's like best drag queen is going to be, you know, for the year 2012.
Right.
So, but you know, I love shows like that. Like I love Face Off. I like Top Model to a certain extent. You know, I like So You Think You Can Dance a great deal.
Well, yeah, it's a mixture of exactly those three. It's the it's the Top Model design of like having to design their dresses, the So You Think You Can Dance, being able to strut their stuff on the catwalk, and the Face Off portion of creating these elaborate makeup designs. And that's, again, the thing with Sharon Needles. It was always something like crazily distinct and unique from everybody else, apparently, on the show. I've only seen like the season one, episode one. Or season 4, episode 1, I mean, in full. And that one actually has Elvira judging. And she and Sharon seem like kindred spirits. I don't know much about the show itself, but the Sharon Needles personality is pretty awesome. There's plenty of YouTube videos up of like the kind of stuff that she'll say and her monologues. She has like these Buddy Cole-style monologues. They're just, oh man, they're so funny. Very good stuff.
Yeah, I remember like when the show was on and stuff, people would always be tweeting like, oh, Sharon Needles is on. Everybody's got to watch this show. And I was like kind of turned off because Sharon Needles is like kind of a hacky name, you know?
Yeah, that's every drag name, though, honestly. Like these people come on with, well, I think it's actually no, that doesn't make any sense because you love puns. And that's the punniest drag name I've ever heard of.
Well,
Sharon Needles.
If she's addicted to heroin, then I guess it would be like a pun name. I don't know. It's just hacky. Like, come up with like if Bart Simpson made Mo, the bartender, say your drag queen name, then it's not a good drag queen name.
I didn't say it, though. I don't think that was ever an episode. But I haven't watched that show for like the past 2 decades, so.
You know what I'm saying. Like, if your drag queen name is Amanda Huggenkiss or, you know, Hugh Jazz. I don't, you know, just one of those names. I don't think that's not very clever. So I was always just turned off by the name because it seemed hacky. So I didn't think that anything other than hackiness could come from it. But you sent me some YouTube videos and she seems pretty all right.
And I sent you that clip of her and Freddy Krueger drag and that probably changed your tune a bit too.
Yeah, I got,
and man,
it gets there's a weird as a boner.
Yeah. Probably the most, yeah, there's nothing weird about that boner, friend. That was probably legit. You're like, female Freddy Krueger.
That was the most natural boner I've ever got. The culmination of 30 years of
the Freddy Krueger obsession.
Yeah.
Boobs. Fake boobs. That's all I needed.
Of unknown desires.
But yeah, and there's another segment where she's in the Freddy Krueger drag again, and she even has this edited together audio for like her special track list, which is nothing weird. It's not like her track listing is different from other drag queens because I've never heard a drag queen lip sync to the Yeah Yeah Yeahs or Blondie or anything like that nature. And Marilyn Manson too. She'll lip sync to Marilyn Manson. But yeah, she came out in the Freddy Krueger attire and she even added some audio specifically for her because it was dealing with people she was talking to on the show, and it was in the Freddy Krueger voice. Like, it sounded just like Freddy Krueger. So she had some sort of audio distortion thing to make her sound like Freddy Krueger.
Maybe she'll play Freddy in the next remake.
Man, I can only hope. Like, I would be pleased as punch if this person got a movie hosting deal. Like, I know people don't really watch a lot of movie host programs anymore. Like, that's not a thing, thanks to Netflix and stuff. But I think she could definitely bring it back. And I would be watching weekly, because just very stylish and very funny.
You would be watching weekly, W-E-A-K-L-Y, because you'd be so in love and you'd have the vapors.
Yeah, my knees would be shaking the entire time.
Speaking of weekly, W-E-A-K-L-Y, you saw that movie Prometheus, didn't you?
I saw Prometheus, yeah. I saw it with my pops.
How did he feel about the aliens?
Well, I know where you're headed with this. He thought it was fine. Like, he was very much into the idea of, like, okay, so now we know where they come from. But I imagine that you are probably not the same thinking.
Yeah, no, I don't care where the aliens came from. So I was upset that I had to deal with all this mythology in a movie that I just wanted to be about space and stuff.
To be honest, I actually agree with that. Like, the last 5 minutes of that film, spoiler alert, if you do want to see Prometheus, do not listen to the next 5 minutes of this podcast. This is all we're going to be talking about. But yeah, the last 5 or 2.5 minutes of Prometheus, where you see the alien come out of that Martian dude, I thought it was kind of pointless. I mean, I don't really care about what happened after it, you know? I thought the story itself in Prometheus was good enough. Although I didn't like the characters. I mean, I thought, like, if this is such an important mission, why are you getting the shittiest crew together? Like, these people are taking off their helmets in environments that seem all right. You know, just, oh, this looks like Earth. I mean, a real scientist would not do that sort of thing. Like,
yeah.
Oh, let's just go batshit crazy. When are we going to be on a foreign planet again? You've only been there a day. Give it some fucking time. Like, you've got plenty of, apparently, you have plenty of resources to be exploring this planet for, you know, more than just a couple of hours. But no way, Jose. They're fucking taking off their helmets, fucking each other. Just completely being...
Half of them gave up. Like, half of the scientists, like, they get to the planet and they find some corpses and they're like, oh my god, I didn't know it was going to be dangerous being the first people to go to an alien planet.
Yeah, no shit. And then, like...
I want to go back home. I didn't know there was going to be danger. No shit there's going to be danger, son. If I go to the supermarket, I assume there's going to be some danger. Much less an alien fucking planet.
And no offense to friends with tattoos on their faces, but why the hell are you... hiring, like, this radically bizarre tattooed face geologist to come on the trip?
You should never hire people with tattoos
on their faces.
Anyway,
I mean, come on, like, he had a checkerboard on his face or some shit and a mohawk. Like, who in their right mind would hire that guy? Like, yes, this is the geologist we need, and he's antisocial and he doesn't work well in groups. Yeah, make sure we get him on the roster for the most important scheduled mission ever.
And he's afraid of aliens?
Yeah, I mean, that was another weird thing. Not being briefed about what they're doing on the trip, even they spent like 2.5 years in stasis.
Yeah, until they get there.
Yeah, this is a job? Sure enough. I think if they would have given some background, like some Blade Runner-esque background, which Ridley Scott is definitely capable of doing, having done Blade Runner, just kind of showing us that Earth is so shitty and that the economy just keeps getting worse and worse, to where these scientists are just like, yeah, 2 years in stasis, I'll do it. I'll go as part of this corporation's bizarre plan to explore space.
Yeah, nothing adds up in that movie.
It's kind of weird, yeah. Like, for me, it was mostly the characters, but I think the overall discussion, like, really, Scott has a lot of parental issues with these alien films. So I think that was even more heavy-handed than this one. Like, there's that exact line from the robot David where he says, he's having this discussion with the protagonist of the film, this lady, Sean. She goes, what do you know about wanting anyway? And the robot goes, well, I don't know about, you're right, I don't know anything of wanting, but what's the phrase? Don't we all want to kill our parents? And he's talking about, like, them finding out who the creators of the human race are and all this kind of stuff. and what it means to like go after them. And he's questioning their methods, like what they're doing, why they want to find these people. Why do we want to find these Martians? But that line just threw me off. It was like, don't we all want to kill our parents? I never want to kill my parents. I know that's not like a common thing. And your laughter is probably suggesting like, I don't know. Did you ever want to kill your parents?
Nah, man. What am I, a creep?
Exactly. It's like, I know it's some sort of psychological discussion that he's getting into, but fuck that noise. Like, that's for a crew that's full of insane people who are just like, hey, didn't you fly all the way out here to get laid? And, you know, I'm going to play this accordion on a spaceship. There are a lot of weird holes in the film. But again, like, this goes back to the fact that it's science fiction, not science reality. So I guess in science fiction, you can have your characters, no matter how qualified a scientist they are, be as batshit crazy as you want to be.
Yeah. And then when those scientists actually stumble across one of these engineers of, you know, different species who like perfected, you know, who thousands of years ago, millions of years ago, perfected, you know, intergalactic space travel. When you finally run into one, they're unspeaking hulkish brutes. Because that would happen.
Yeah, why not? I mean, if you... They were bugs compared to those guys. Like, tiny bugs, and they would not shut up. It's like, if you woke up after how many, like, thousands of years of sleep, and the first thing you see are these shrieking monkeys, and, yeah, I don't know, man. I'd rip one of their heads off.
Never, no. If, all right, if I bought some sea monkeys and put them in the water and everything, and then I went to sleep, and then I woke up, and they were, like, all around me, like, talking at me, like, mm-hmm. What the fuck? How did this happen? How did you get here? We're both obviously very intelligent. Let's talk this out. Like, I wouldn't just go, alien smash. It's so silly and stupid.
Well, they weren't even speaking the same language, for one. No, like, that never even gets breached.
English. The robot spoke their language, man.
No, it didn't respond, though. It didn't respond at all.
I know, because he just hulked out on him. Because apparently these guys who created intergalactic space travel and the human race are unthinking brutes. That's what I'm saying. It's idiotic.
Okay, well, let's get to the core of the story then at the very beginning. Like, why does this even happen? The first shot that we see in this movie is one of these Martian guys, like these pale, big forehead Martian dudes in a robe, no less.
They look like the vampires from I Am Legend, but buff.
Exactly, yeah. And he's got this weird sort of, I don't know what it is. It's some sort of like brass orb that when he, upon opening it, he has like this weird sort of metallic form in it or some sort of black mess that's in it.
It's chewing tobacco.
Possibly. Anyway, he puts it in his mouth, starts to feel this effect of whatever it does, and it's ripping apart his DNA, and his mothership takes off. Like, it's leaving him there on this waterfall, and then he like, you know, indulges in this cup, feels the effects, wigs out, starts coming apart at the seams, and falls over the waterfall. And that's the intro to the film. So what the hell does that mean? Like, I mean, he's breaking himself apart because we then see that these little orbs of multi-organism cells start forming. It looks like embryonic cells, which doesn't make any sense. Like, if you imagine anything about evolution, he would have been making, like, little cell carriers at first, not these perfectly formed zygotes in water. Because what the fuck are they going to... Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. But let's just imagine that's how it happened. In that case, what the hell is he doing there? Why was he the sole person left to do that? And what's the point of him doing that? Like, is he the sacrifice to make humanity just so they can come back and kill it later? Or are they just making humanity just to make humanity? And then when they see what it is, after they've woken up after thousands of years, like, fuck this noise, I'm not going to even talk to these guys, and then bust heads and try to fly off to another planet.
Yeah.
Nothing. Does that make any sense?
No, it makes no sense.
All right.
And then, like, yeah. This whole, like, theory on the interwebs about, because, like, they get there, you know, like, the scientists get to the new planet, and, like, they carbon date one of the dead bodies, and they're like, oh, he's been dead for 2,000 years. So, like, there's this whole theory about how Jesus was an alien, and, like, the other aliens were so mad that they crucified alien buddy that... And I mean, that seems to be the way, I mean, thinking back on the movie, like, there's so much, like, crucifixion, like, symbolism in the movie that's probably really Scott was going for, which is silly. That's like something like a 14-year-old stoner would write. All right, so an alien came down, and he was Jesus, you see.
True. Yeah, I mean, it's got this religious subtext to the film that is pretty heavy-handed also. But I think the parenting thing is also heavy-handed. It's not just about creation. It's about creation on a very minimalist level. Like, there's even that scene where the protagonist is upset that she can't have a child. And she goes through that entire rigmarole, which is horrifying and complete appetite killer. So it's a lot going on. I don't think Ridley Scott was necessarily concerned with the mythology of aliens. And to be honest, that ending scene looks purely like an afterthought. Like, oh, okay. So the producer said, hey, wouldn't it be awesome if the aliens from Alien came from this alien? That sounds like what that meeting would have been like.
Yeah, it was like Ridley Scott was like, hey, I want to make this movie about, like, space and Jesus, you know, and all this.
And parental issues. And like, yeah, but put some aliens in there, man.
Yeah, they're like, well, if you can make it some sort of prequel or sequel or remake, then we'll do it.
Yeah, that stuff is pretty whack. And I think what he was going for was more of the themes of, like you said, religion and what it means to be a parent or a creator of life or whatever. So I don't think there was a lot of thought put into all the loopholes that exist in the story. Honestly, like, whatever it was all edited out.
Yeah.
Just upon that first watch.
I was going to say the most infuriating part of that is I read an interview where Ridley Scott was like, yeah, you know, we left some holes in there, some unanswered questions, because we'll answer them in part two. And that's not how you do a story. Like, when Martin Scorsese was coming up with Taxi Driver, he wasn't like, all right, I'll put in a lot of bullshit that doesn't make sense in hopes that I get to do a part two. Like, no, you make a story. Like, I understand now in this age of doing 9 Harry Potter movies or whatever, people are always looking to do a sequel and stuff, but no, write a complete fucking story. Like, that's the point of movies, is that you have a story. And not, oh, if you guys give us another 1350, we'll tell you how it ends. We'll tell you, we'll explain all the shit that doesn't make sense and is stupid if you give us more money.
Yeah, I mean, for the guy who did Blade Runner, I would anticipate like a wholly encapsulated story. And if you had a problem with it, then you can go back and do a director's cut. And the director's cut was awesome for Blade Runner, by the way. But for this case, yeah, I agreed with you to an extent. It's just to the fact that, like, you know, serials of any form of storytelling exist. As much of that sucks. Like, movies, they're permitted to do serials. I agree with you that it should just be one story, because I'm not going to hold the attention span to do two.
Well, I mean, I'm all into, like, serials and, like, trilogies and stuff like that, but that's not what this movie is. This movie is a complete story that just has, like, a few things that, like, make it make sense unanswered. And those are apparently the basis of the next part of the story. Like, you know, like, this movie, like, the way that everything happens in it, there's no real need to do a second one. Like, it stands on its own. But, like, the only reason you would have a second one is to fill people in on the shit that doesn't make sense in this one.
So would you feel better if they named it Prometheus Volume 1, like Kill Bill Volume 1?
Well, no, because if you just watch Kill Bill 1 by itself, like, that's not a complete story. The two halves make up the story. In Prometheus, you've got the complete story. You just, like, as far as narrative is concerned, you just don't have the complete story as far as the glue to the narrative is concerned.
Mm.
Like, you've got, you know, your beginning, middle, and end and everything, and but you just don't have the whys to the beginning, the middle, and end. It'd be like if at the end of Empire Strikes Back, like, if everything happened the same, but they cut out the scene, or, like, they cut out, like, the scenes in, like, the first two that explains why Boba Fett was after Han Solo. It would be like that. Like, you've got everything there, but you just don't have the parts that give us the motivation for why those things happened.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it was, like, super boring and nothing happened throughout the entire movie.
No, that's bullshit. I mean, there's tons of stuff happening.
Nah.
And we all saw it.
Almost nothing happened for, like, the first 45 minutes. Like, almost literally nothing. It was just people waking up.
That's kind of like how Aliens is, anyway. From what I remember of Alien or Aliens, that's all it is. People waking up in space.
But then Alien attacks and kills them all.
Yeah. In this case, like, black stuff touches that guy's face and it melts off.
Yeah.
It becomes, like, this weird X-Men's Toad sort of character. The other guy gets some sort of lamprey thing in his throat. That lady has to perform a cesarean section on herself. I mean, it's got a ton of fucked up shit in it. Like, once it starts rolling, it really gets rolling. So, I'll give you, like, the first 40 minutes, pretty slow goings, but, hell, that's space. And yet, like, after that, man, people, their guts are everywhere. Like, stuff is definitely flying around.
Yeah.
The entire crew tries to take out that one guy, he doesn't die for shit. He's like a Cheb Chelios character. You put flame on him, he's just gonna jump on you.
Yeah, but I've got no idea why any of that happened, and I have no idea why I should care, because I didn't care about any of those characters.
But it happened, though. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to say, like, nothing happened, you know, stuff obviously happened. That was my point. It's like, stuff was happening. It was just very disconnected and probably had no point to it.
Well, let me revise and say that nothing happened that I cared about.
That's fine. I agree with that.
But
Or I can see where you're coming from.
And now, it's time for the lightning round.
Hold on one second. Robert Pattinson of Twilight fame says, "I want to strangle the inventor of R. Pat's nickname." Star yeah. admitted that he struggled to see himself as a credible actor following his role in the Twilight films. The industry executives also found it hard to take him seriously. Pretty awesome nickname, though.
It's a nice nickname. Also, I think it's funny that he thinks this is why people are not taking him seriously. And it's not the fact that in 5 movies he plays a pedophile vampire that only eats deers. I think it's probably why people are not taking him seriously. And the other movie he did was that stupid Depression-era love story with Reese Witherspoon. So if you're spending your time between these two things, you know, like, this makes me so mad. Like, these people who, you know, do these movies, like, you sign on when you're, like, a struggling actor to play, like, the shiny pedophile vampire. And then, you know, 7 movies in, and people want to typecast you or not take you seriously because you're the shiny pedophile vampire, then you go, "Oh, people aren't taking me seriously. I can't believe it." It's your own fault, dude. If you didn't want to be known as the pedophile shiny vampire, then don't sign up to do the pedophile shiny vampire movie. I mean, think of all the great actors that started out in the classic pedophile shiny vampire roles, you know? You know, you've got James Dean in Pedophile Shiny Vampire Without a Cause. You know, you've got Martin Sheen in Pedophile Shiny Vampire Apocalypse Now. You know, there's a Robert.
There's Marlon Brando in On the Waterfront with pedophile shiny vampires.
Yeah. And Robert De Niro in Pedophile Shiny. I don't know. But you see what I'm saying. You see what
there was the Al Pacino film Scent of a Pedophile Shiny Vampire.
Yeah, and so on. If you want to be known as a real actor, do real people movies. Don't do baby movies for 14-year-old girls and then be, "Oh, nobody takes me seriously. Oh, I'm on the cover of Teen Beat magazine every week of my own choosing, but nobody takes me seriously. Oh, I'm R. Pets."
And R. Pets.
It's not.
That is such a baby nickname, though.
It is.
It's neat, but it's weird.
I don't think that's why people aren't taking him seriously, because WWE superstar R-Truth, he's taken seriously as fuck. And he's got basically the same nickname.
So Pets is short for Pattinson. What's Truth short for? Truthinson?
Yeah, Truthinson. That's his name.
Robert Truthinson?
Yep.
Next up on the lightning round, Saudis got talent, but no women or music. A Saudi city known for its ultra-conservatism has reportedly created its own version of the Arabs Got Talent television reality show, but with no music and women banned from taking part.
Yeah, this.
Guess what they do instead?
What do they do?
Religious chants, recite poems, and engage in sporting events.
Would you watch this show, Mr. Frisbee?
Absolutely not. There's, like, nothing about this that sounds great to me. I do not like religious chants, no real interest in sports, and poems sometimes put me to sleep. Like, it has to be some real scandalous Bukowski-style stuff, or else I'm not going to care. And I doubt they're talking about getting drunk and, you know, going to bed with floozies.
Yeah, I think it's funny that they're doing poems and religious chants. Like, you know, the first guy comes up and, you know, he does, like, a 5-minute-long religious chant, you know, and then the next guy comes up and he does a poem, which I assume is probably some sort of religious poem. And then the next guy comes up and, you know, he hands like a football to one of the judges, you know, like whoever the Saudi Howard Stern is or Howie Mandel. And then he's like, hey, throw it real far. I'll catch it. It's like the third sports guy is doing something like relatively extreme. And I think that's funny. Like, you know, like the first two dudes do like their religious chants and stuff. And then the next guy comes out and does a 360 dunk right in Arab Howard Stern's face.
Yeah, that would be pretty extreme. That's the only guy possibly getting smuggled in Mountain Dew or something.
Yeah, yeah, that guy's running the Mountain Dew underground market for the
rest. Yeah, the religious chants and poems, I don't know, doesn't really make much sense. It's not to say that any sort of Got Talent show needs to have music, but these three things specifically are just very silly to me.
Yeah, like how talented do you have to be to do a religious chant?
Or a poem reading. Like, oh man, you should see how he reads this fucking poem. It's unbelievable, out of this world.
Yeah,
poem reading.
But maybe right now, the Saudi version of Pool Party is like, how talented do you have to be to become the best popper and locker? It doesn't make any sense at all to me.
Must be some sort of harlot to be popping and locking like that.
There's certainly
a real infidel. Who wants that?
They're certainly going to hell for dancing the robots so well.
I wonder if they have the same problems with their co-hosts having nicknames too. Like too many nicknames.
Probably.
Among other things.
Among other things. I like that. I like the vague, menacing nature of that.
Awesome. Because it's staying in. Next up on the lightning round, a teacher is accused of having sex with not one, not two, not three, but four students 2 months after she got married. A teacher began an affair with an underage student just 2 months after she got married, has been jailed for 5 months.
Nice.
You like this story quite a bit.
Yeah, this is an erotic story.
She was 26 years old, son. That is highly sexual.
You got that right. And highly erotic.
What's especially hilarious about this story is the name of the high school, Banger High School.
Yeah, I love that. That's so good. That's like when that fat guy who was protesting that he wasn't getting all he could eat was from Thinsville.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I love this. I mean, the teacher was playing it safe, though. The age of consent in Pennsylvania is 16, so she was doing the right thing. Although it's weird, like she was like charged with corruption of minors, which... it's silly, because like if it's legal to have sex with minors, what the hell is corruption of minors? Like, she must
have,
I guess if you're like having really nice romantic sex with them, it would be all right with these babies.
Well, yeah. Corruption of minors, according to their laws, is when someone older than 18 corrupts the morals of anyone under 18. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know what makes the lovemaking so different about that. Maybe she's corrupting morals because she's in this morally styled binding agreement with somebody else, and she's totally throwing that to the wind to have sex with 18-year-olds or 17-year-olds.
Lots of them.
Yeah, it just doesn't stop.
Yeah, but I love this. I love that it's against the law to corrupt the morals of anyone under 18. In America, that's a law.
In ancient Greece, it was a law. That's what makes this so fascinating to me, because that was what Socrates got jailed for and had to, you know, drink hemlock for. So, hell, the times have changed. This woman does not have to drink hemlock. She just needs to go to jail for 5 months. And again, it's really silly. Like, this is not, I don't think it's an arrestable offense. Like, if their laws are stating the age of sexual consent in Pennsylvania is 16, and anyone between 16 and 18 consented, I'm not sure why there's this buffered law to say, like, well, if it seems immoral, then we can't really not arrest you, right?
Yeah.
Right?
This is so weird. Like, you know, like whenever we get on the subject of like cigarettes and like taxing cigarettes and stuff, I always get all outraged that it, you know, it's like that the government's trying to tax morality and stuff like this. But here's a law that just says point blank, if you don't have good morals, then we can arrest you. They're very straightforward on this one.
Yeah. It discusses like how she was involved with this one boy and how they would drive to the Walmart parking lot and have sex in cars there.
Nice.
I like the way this is written, by the way, because it says they would drive to secluded locations and have sex in cars, such as this Walmart parking lot, which only makes me think that they drive to a secluded location, like, all right, now let's go have sex in as many cars as possible. We have to have sex in all the cars.
Now that's what I call a corruption of morals. But, you know, also, the idea that this lady, this 26-year-old, was corrupting the miners' morals is absurd. I bet it was these little kids. Like, little kids today are fucking, they're pretty bully. Like, they've got no morals at all. I've seen the real world. These kids are fucking Satan worshippers these days. And I'm sure that this teacher was a nice stand-up citizen until she came in contact with these freaks with their Halo games and their Justin Bieber shirts.
And their unwillingness to cooperate, apparently, because the prosecutors dropped charges that involved three other teens when they refused to cooperate with the investigation. Teacher herself has only admitted to having sex with two of the 17-year-old boys from the school. So maybe it's just two. Or maybe it was four and she just got confused.
Yeah. Once again, like, this is such a weird thing. I think it's becoming like some sort of like fashionable thing. And I think I've mentioned this before, where like older ladies are like pretty cool with having sex with like little kids that are boys. You know, because of the aforementioned Twilight and, like, you know, stuff like that. Like, it just seems like a fashionable thing. Like, hey, ladies, it's all right to get together and go see Twilight and, like, be 36-year-olds and, like, cheer when Taylor Lautner takes off his shirt and shows his 17-year-old abs. It's fine. I don't know if the news is just reporting on it more, but I think that's becoming, you know, and, like, the whole, like, MILF thing and, like, cougar thing and stuff, too. Like, I think it's just becoming, like, weird and fashionable to have sex with underage boys if you're abroad.
Yeah, I think so.
It's about time.
Yeah. Odd story. Probably the oddest one that we've had this week. Unless this next one beats it. 100 Midget March has been called to protest the Snow White casting. Little people across Hollywood are rising up against the producers of Snow White and the Huntsman for casting tall people in the role of Snow White's dwarves.
Yeah, in addition to Robo John Brown being here this week, as always, we've also got Virtual Mark Fredo. How do you feel about this story, Virtual Mark Fredo?
Midgets are the rats of humans.
That's true. That is true.
Wow. What an opinion.
A little controversial, but I agree nonetheless.
A tad bit controverse. Do you plan on seeing this movie, Snow White and the Huntsman?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to see it. I didn't want to spend any money. I love that Charlize Theron. So I'll watch whatever she does. But I'm also a little turned off, as the movie is about Charlize Theron, who, like, gets really upset when her mirror tells her that Kristen Stewart is prettier than her, which is, like, just the most outrageous, you know, use of suspension of disbelief that Hollywood has ever had to make us endure. But, yeah, no, I was thinking about seeing it. You know, Charlize Theron is cool. Chris Hemsworth is cool. Midgets with axes are cool.
I'm a staunch Kristen Stewart advocate, because unlike our pets, she's actually trying to do stuff that's outside the realm of a wispy, voiceless, submissive girl from the Twilight series. I mean, she was Pat Benatar. It's pretty rockin'.
Yes.
And in this case, she's like throwing axes and shit around. And also, to be fair, the line in the movie, or at least in the trailer, is who's the fairest of them all? Which could just mean a number of things. I mean, fair is such a vague term anyway.
She's stern but fair.
Exactly. That's one way to take it. Like, who's the most just or who's most rightfully deserving of the crown of them all? And in that movie, I mean, hell, Charlize Theron in those previews turns into a flock of ravens. So who knows what the fuck they're talking about.
Yeah. And then also her sidekick is Stephen Richards.
Stephen Richards?
A wrestling joke. But yeah, like, I guess the fairest one of all could mean that Kristen Stewart does not add extra armies to her lands when you get up to pee while you're playing Risk with her.
Yeah. It could also mean that she's not constantly the banker when you play Monopoly.
Yeah. But yeah, to get back to, you know, the part of the story where midgets are mad that they got normal actors to play midgets in this movie, shut up, midgets. If you guys were good at acting, you know, maybe you guys would have got picked, but they went with real actors. I mean, we've got the technology now. You know, we've got Hollywood technology now. ever since The Lord of the Rings. That makes it so that midgets are basically obsolete as far as Hollywood is concerned. You know, they used to bring in midgets to play the quirky Shakespeare quoting mystics in Ghoulies 2. But now we don't really need midgets for that. We've got CGI. We'll get like a real actor to play these roles.
Right. I mean, obviously not fans of the Lord of the Rings series because, you know, the hobbits, who are shorter than most men, or even the dwarf in that movie, who's supposed to be shorter than most men, of like midget stature, in this case being totally analogous to Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, were played by normal-sized actors. So where were the marches then?
Where were the marches, midgets?
They had no idea. They were just not seen. Midgets are not fans of J.R.R. Tolkien, apparently. They do not care. They don't know what that is. But when it's in the title, Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, oh man, watch out. Yeah, I don't understand why they care. And I don't understand their parallel examples either. In an issued statement, casting regular average-sized actors as Snow White's dwarves is the equivalent of Universal casting a white actor to play a role written for an African-American person and digitally changing the color of their skin. That's a pretty bold statement, I think.
Yeah. But yeah, another thing I like about this story is that, you know, midgets are like the only people, like the only group of people left that you can call obsolete and like nobody will really get mad about it.
How often do you have to call people obsolete?
You can call a number of people obsolete. But midgets are the only times that you could do that. You know, like, I mean, you could totally just goof on midgets, you know, like all the time. Like, and nobody ever gets mad about it. Like, they're like the only group of people left that you can just totally goof on them. Constantly. Just hate on them.
You know what's changing that, though? Have you ever seen Game of Thrones?
Oh, yeah, yeah. With, what's-his-face. But still, even though, like, that guy's, like, a really super good actor, like, you could go into a party, I don't know, make some sort of joke, you know, and be like, hey, you need me to reach the cereal on the top shelf for you there, Peter Dinklage, the best actor there is on television? And, like, the whole party would laugh and be like, ah, he's a midget. He's not even a real person.
I don't know, man. That guy carries some serious weight. Like, he's been in a lot of different projects, from, like, In Bruges to The Baxter. Man, I don't know if people are willing to make those sort of comments. Like, he might be part of that Hollywood elite that has guards at every beck and call. So, like, if you say something mean like that at the party, no one laughs, and then when you go to your car, it explodes.
I don't know.
Like, man, that... I'm surprised that cereal joke didn't get more of a laugh than you, like, turn the key in your car door and boom, it explodes.
I think everyone would laugh at that joke.
What an important joke.
It's an important joke. But, I mean, seriously, like, I mean, what other group of people can you laugh at as openly as midgets? None.
Scientologists.
I guess. I don't think those count.
You're talking about, like... physically different people or just groups of people?
Yeah, like physically different. Like people who are...
You know, as a ginger, speaking on behalf of all gingers, I can tell you that gingers get shat on for no reason at parties. Like if somebody wants to pick a group, gingers seem to be like the most socially acceptable to where they think like, well, you know, it's a white guy with freckles. Who cares? Gingers suck.
Yeah, that's true. Gingers are on that list too. You can openly make fun of gingers and nobody cares.
Yeah. Even myself, like, I don't think I'm a ginger, although I do have, like, one eyebrow that's now orange. It's all, like, red hair now. It's real weird. It's like I have the David Bowie of eyebrows, and one's different from the other. That's supposed to be, like, normal looking. Yeah, but I have, like, an orange eyebrow now. I used to just have nothing. Like, it was just brown hair and freckles, and, like, maybe some red hair if I grew my beard out.
If you went to, like, a Don Rickles comedy show, and you took... your midget friend with you, and you sat in the front row, who do you think Don Rickles would make fun of first, you or the midget?
Probably the midget, yeah.
Nice.
And then when he saw me chuckling, he'd say, what's wrong with you, freckle face? You think something's funny?
I don't come down to where you work and knock the freckles out of your mouth.
What a jerk.
Don Rickles is so mean.
Yeah, he's the meanest dude in business. But anyway, that does it for this week's lightning round. News of the weird!
This is the segment on the show that we like to call, it's formerly called Frisbee Got Mail, but it's now called throw your fingers in the air so Frisbee can see where you're at. It's the segment where we read emails that we've gotten. And you can send some of those emails to poolpartyradio@gmail.com. And I pray to God that you do. Because some weeks, it's the only stuff we have to talk about.
Indeed. And we have stuff to talk about this week. We have an email from a previous guest of the Ho. Fuck.
What?
Previous guest. Sorry, I'm distracted right now. Previous guest of the show, Mr. Unstable, who writes saying, will you guys do a vidcast edition this summer from an actual pool? That'd be ultra rad. Love, Mr. Unstable. That's an awesome email, by the way. That's a short, concise, to the point, and incorporates the slang term rad in it. I cannot get behind this email enough. We have to have him back on the show soonish, by the way.
We are having him back next month.
Excellent.
I think he said he would be back on the show next month, but I realized that there's our Friday the 13th next month, so I think that would be the proper time to have Mr. Unstable on.
Absolutely. Yeah, if there is some way to incorporate, like, Sharon Needles and Mr. Unstable, that'd be awesome. They seem like they would have, like, a great floor show or something, music and lip syncing.
But yeah, a pool party vidcast would be sweet. That way America could see our nice rockin' bods that we've been working on all winter.
Mm-hmm.
Time to show those off.
Do you have any body hair?
Yeah, I got some body hair. I got, like, a nice manly hairy chest.
All right. Yeah, I have a hairy chest too. Hairy pectorals and even some hair that kind of works its way into locks on my stomach. I had to get rid of that stuff. I actually trimmed it all off.
Like beautiful curly locks of hair?
No, like one or two. It was just like these clumps of hair that would just get stuck like between my belt buckle and pants and just tug. I'm like, oh, this is painful. So I got rid of it.
That's for the best.
It's super weird. It feels extremely awkward. Like after having that stuff for a good, 15, 12 years or so, it's really bizarre just to let go of that. Like I put on shirts now, I can feel it on my stomach. Ooh, real strange. It'll grow back, but it's just real strange.
Don't let it grow back. Just buy softer shirts.
No, I mean, it feels nice, but it's just like somebody is patting my stomach. Because my shirts would just kind of lay on top of the hair on the stomach before. And now it's somebody's like, oh, here's what your stomach feels like all the time with these shirts. So, yeah. I'm not sure how much I'd be into rocking my bod, but a vidcast would be fun. I mean, the show is more, well, yeah, it's really just a clever name based on an Aquabat song. But we have actually had the opportunity to go to a pool to do one of these podcasts. Like, I don't even know anyone who owns a pool.
My aunt-in-law has a pool. We could do it there.
No way. Where does she live?
She just lives right outside of town, near the, near where the tarantulas live.
Oh, the giant spiders?
Yeah. So, we could go there. Or we could just get, like, a tiny little, like, baby pool and go to, Jesse P.S.'s house from Pot Awful, because he's already got, like, the vidcast stuff set up. He does his show, live with video twice a week at podawful.com. And, so we could just take, like, a little tiny baby pool, just do it there with him. We'll all just have a nice pool party together.
There's nothing that's ever been done in the history of New York that involved a wading pool full of water on a rooftop. So I'm sure we'll be innovators. I've never seen this done, like, on a jeans advertisement or a Miracle Whip advertisement. So we'll be the forerunners.
Yeah. And if somebody calls us out for ripping that idea off, we can just tell them that we're doing a Weekend at Bernie's remake. And we'll bring along a dead corpse.
Beautiful. We'll bring around Kipper.
Yeah.
It'll make so much sense.
Young Kipper Lacey. Man, speaking of Kipper Lacey, that motherfucker was found.
Really?
Yeah, like, to bring everybody back up to speed, a lot of episodes ago, I got this thing in the mail and it was like, hey, have you seen this kid? He's been missing since 1956. And we're still looking for him. And, I figured it was time to give the fuck up. Because if, your kid's missing and it's been, like, longer than 3 months or whatever, like, just give up because they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out Kipper Lacey was alive and they found him.
Well, that's excellent news.
Yeah.
But that's also shitty news because that's what do we name our mascot now? Yeah. The Drowning Boy.
We're going to have to age him significantly and make him alive.
Okay.
It's also kind of bullshit, though, because, like, there's, like, all this stuff. Like, there's a website, and, like, a Facebook where, like, people, would, like, get together and be like, oh, put together by the mom. You know, and like people would be like, oh, I hope you find Kipper Lacey. Never give up hope. You know, and like she would post stuff constantly like, oh, we still miss Kipper Lacey. You know, we hope we find him one day. And now that they've found him, they've just like they've taken down the website and the Facebook. So like all these people who are like, you know, really like emotionally invested in this and like followed the Facebook and the website for years and years and years, they get no sense of closure.
Do you even know, like, where was he? Was he at like a Walmart, like in the Target video game section the entire time?
Probably. He was probably playing like an Elvira arcade game.
Beautiful. Yeah, I can totally get behind that. He was at pinballs the entire time.
Yeah.
Learning everything sexual there is to know through the Elvira pinball games.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's kind of bullshit. Like, if you take to the public and get the public involved in your shitty missing kid story, and then you find your kid, like, you owe it to those people to explain where the fuck your kid was, what's going to happen now, what's, you know, what's doing. But these people, they just decided to take their dead kid and go home.
Yeah, I don't know what happens next or that sort of thing. Like, I don't have any kids, so I'm not even sure what that'd be like.
You don't even have any dead kids.
I know. I'm real, real slow on this entire adulthood thing. But yeah, looking forward to Mr. Unstable's visit again to Pool Party Radio. And we should probably get some sort of vidcast pool party going in New York. Because Warday and Jono are there, apparently.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Also,
Mark Fredo is there.
Indeed. And Mike Dick. And a slew of other people. Like, gosh, there's like a lot of people in New York. That's so weird.
Who would have thought? There were a lot of people in the biggest city.
Pretty strange, if you ask me. Small town. Our next email is titled Angler DJ, Angler DJ, Angler DJ. That's a throwback to last week when we were asking for people to give us some more fishing-themed Morrissey songs. Because what if there's a Morrissey fish? What kind of songs would he write? Mm-hmm. And this would be the chorus from Panic in the Thames of London. Something like that.
Also, Koi Racer is one. Koi Racer.
Oh, Koi Racer?
Koi Racer. We've got to kill this pretty thing. Koi Racer. It's from one of the solo albums. The Dive.
I see. We'll get, yeah.
They'll understand my joke. Koi Racer.
It's a beautiful tone. Jim goes on to write, if Jason is leaving, can we put together a Ghost of Jason Frisbee soundboard? Robo John Brown could insult him, and Ghosto Blades could reply with a story about being chased down by a drunk on a motorcycle.
Oh my god. I don't think John Brown likes that idea.
John Brown's afraid of ghosts?
I think he might be.
He's afraid of robo-ghosts?
Mm.
It sounds pretty disconcerted.
I know, it's got him, he's at a loss for words now for the first time since joining the show.
I don't know, that Badland Girls tribute was pretty endearing. I guess we'll be sticking around for a bit. Seems all right.
Hey, all right, so you're back on the show?
Yeah, I think so. Why not? That's fine.
Can John Brown stick around? Or, well, what do you think, John Brown? Like, I mean, you know, now that, you know, Frisbee, he threatened to quit and everything. So basically it was me and John Brown's thing. Like, is all right if you, John Brown, since now that you have pretty much 50% say in Pool Party Radio, is it all right if Jason Frisbee sticks around?
It screws up the vibe.
Well, a little bit, but I don't think we can do it without him. What do you say? Come on.
Okay.
All right. Welcome back, Jason Frisbee. You're now 100% part of the show again.
I wasn't paying attention. I was sending a text message. What did he say? He said he wants me back?
Telling you, son.
Ooh.
All right, what?
Yeah, I'll be back on the show, 100%. It sounds good.
Can you give us some reasons why it's all right with you, John Brown, for Frisbee to come back?
I try to keep my friends close, but my enemies closer.
I hear that.
Well, Robo John Brown, I'm a robo-racist, but I don't think that's going to get in the way of anything between us. So, I would say put her there, but you cannot shake hands, since you are a disembodied voice on a soundboard.
He's not on a soundboard. He's an actual robot that I built in my spare time.
Oh, I can't see him from where I'm at.
Yeah,
I'm halfway across the country, so I'll have to take your word for it.
I had to buy a second microphone for him and everything. It was very expensive.
I gotcha. I feel you. Yeah. when you want the king of the ghetto burbs or whatever, you don't want any imitations. You don't want just a soundboard of set phrases. You want You want a robot that can think for itself, his AI style.
Yeah, his AI is as good as Michael Fassbender's in Prometheus.
You know what? Just go back in time and just say it's like as good as Rutger Hauer in Blade Runner.
Don't give me no goddamn spoilers. I never saw that movie.
It's announced like in the first 5 minutes.
All right.
Like, a Blade Runner is a guy who hunts down these cyborgs or these robots. And Rutger Hauer is one of the robots. He's the main robot dude.
And all this time, I thought he was just the completely idiotic vampire from the Buffy movie.
No way, man. That dude is another stuff.
Nah, yeah, I know. He's done
something. Did you ever see Hobo with a Shotgun? I've still not seen that.
Yeah, it's all right. It's very Class of Nukem High-esque. He was very good in Surviving the Game, though, that Rutger Hauer. Which is
I'm not familiar with that.
Oh, it's a movie where him and F. Murray Abraham get together and they, with Jake or with Gary Busey, and they hunt iced tea for sport. It's a very good movie.
Wild. That's the only way I can imagine Rutger Hauer anyway, is just hunting people for sport. With a shotgun, with his fangs, with a nail in his hand. I don't know. But yeah, that does it for our emails. Thank you again for writing in. If you want to write in to Pool Party Radio, you can do so at poolpartyradio@gmail.com. And this brings us to the saddest part of the show, the end of the show.
Yeah, you can go to thepoolpartyradio.com and you know, check out all our episodes and stuff. Check out links to our buddies. Check out
show information, music that we play.
Yeah,
whether or not they're spoilers and what the timestamps are for those during the show.
Most of that'll just be on this episode. I normally don't care if we give out spoilers, but Prometheus has been out for a week, so that'll probably be there.
Right on.
But if you've already listened to this episode, I guess.
Surprise!
yeah, and you can go to our iTunes via that website, or just search on iTunes if you want to, I guess. But you can leave us reviews and comments there, which would be super helpful because then more people can find us. You know, and if four people did that in like 1 week, it would be like super helpful because it doesn't take much to get on like the iTunes front pages and iTunes lists and stuff.
Hell yeah.
I think
also don't forget to like us at facebook.com/poolpartyradio. Likes are always appreciated there. We've had a number of people liking us within the past week or so, and it does our souls good. So yeah. Keep those up. Keep spreading the word about liking Pool Party Radio. And if you like the show, leave us a comment. Send us a message. Or just keep liking the stuff that we post, because we enjoy that too.
That's true.
You can also follow Parker, myself, and the show at Parker Arizona, at Jason Frisbee, and at Pool Party Radio. And we only basically post that we've posted an episode on the Twitter account, so you can keep up with that if you want, but, you know, no rush.
Yeah, no rush to that. It's stupid over there. But most importantly, like Frisbee said, tell people that you like the show. We're not one of these shows. We're not Marc Maron, who, you know, is making a shit ton of money from advertising and then is also going to ask you to donate on top of that because we're insane narcissists that think you just want to throw money away. We're not going to be asking for money and stuff like that like all the other podcasts do. Instead, we want to ask you to just tell your buddies. If you're listening to an episode you think is funny, then turn to the person to the left of you on the subway and slap them. And then pull out your phone and call one of your good friends and tell them to listen to the show.
That's the only way you can do this, by the way. If you're not on a subway, do it on the bus. Strongly encourage you to slap people to your left on the bus.
Yeah, slap them. But seriously, telling people, you know, if you go to iTunes, you know, there used to be like a podcast alley that would tell you all the cool podcasts and they're, you know, on iTunes, it used to tell you stuff. But now if you go to iTunes and look for podcasts, it's all just stuff on Adam Carolla's network or on the Earwolf network or on the Nerdist network. And that's that. So it's really hard for people to find podcasts that aren't done by people who failed miserably at stand-up comedy.
But if you know it's good for you, you'll find the up-and-comers of the comedy world on the Red Band Network. Mm. So go to redbandnetwork.com. You can find the aforementioned Jesse P.S. and his show Pot Awful. You can find the guys Ear Candy, also in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Weird.
They'll be at the pool party.
So weird. So many people.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's everything. So check us out next week. We'll have some other stuff. Until then, this is Parker for Jason Raised Blades saying, fuck you, Chelios.
My neighbor, welcome again to this neighborhood. I'd like to show you something. You know what this is? Maybe if I press this button. This is a cassette player with a little cassette in here, and there's nothing written on it, so we'll just have to play it to see what it is. Do you ever imagine things? Are they scary things? Are they scary things? Do you ever imagine things? Things you'd like to have? Did you ever see a cat's eyes in the dark and wonder what they were? What they were? Did you ever pretend about things like that before?
Did you ever pretend about things like that?
Did you ever grow anything in the garden of your mind?
In the garden of your mind.
You can grow ideas in the garden of your mind.
In the garden of your mind.
It's good to be curious about many things. You can think about things and make believe. All you have to do is think and they'll grow. Imagine every person that you see is somewhat different from every other person in the world. Some can do some things.
Some can do others.
Did you ever think of the many things you've learned to do?
Many things
you did you ever grow anything in the garden of your mind? You can grow ideas in the garden of your mind.
In the garden of your mind.
It's good to be curious about many things. You can think about things and make believe. All you have to do is think and they'll grow. Did you feel like going like that? Let's give the fish some food.
Mr. McFeely,
I didn't order any whistles. That's what they call a slide whistle. Did you feel like going like that?
There are so many things to learn about in this world. And so many people who can help us learn.
And so many people who can help us learn.
Did you ever grow anything in the garden of your mind?
In the garden of your mind.
You can grow ideas in the garden of your mind.
In the garden of your mind.
It's good to be curious about many things. You can think about things and make believe. All you have to do is think. You can think about things and make believe. All you have to do is think, and they'll grow.
Oh no! Prometheus!
Prometheus! It stinks.